Paranormal Fridays. Join Angel and Mike. Let us twist your ear for a moment and share some quality time together talking about the passionate topics within the paranormal spectrum. A loose, fun approach to learn and relate to all our childlike wonderments of the beautiful mysteries of the paranormal. And now, I welcome you all to this Paranormal Friday.
Hello, and I am Mike Walker.
And I am Angel Thacker. Welcome to Paranormal Fridays. That was all right. That we could have done better, you know, but it's okay. Oh. It's the first time we tried to do it together. And
see what happens when you
try to do things. Wow, everybody. Welcome to Paranormal Friday. This is so exciting to be here again. I hope you guys enjoyed all the fun stuff we've done by expanding Paranormal Friday. And today we want to keep the energy going. We want to keep the ride going with fun topics. So what are we talking about tonight?
Tonight, we're talking about near-death experiences.
Ooh.
NDEs.
Ooh, NDE. Oh, hashtag NDE.
Yeah.
I'm going to just acronym everything out. There's just going to be an acronym. That's our goal in life. So near-death experience, that's a good topic. It's such an interesting topic because it happens a lot. You know, people would be surprised how many times a person almost departs and then comes back. And there's all kinds of interesting interpretations of what happens. So God, where do we begin? I don't even know where to throw the dart into the map to start the conversation. Where do you start when you talk about near-death experience?
Well, we can either start with our own personal or someone that actually put it on a different level of a map for us to explore. Yeah.
Well, I guess I could kind of talk about what it means to me, because it's like the first thing you got to think about, I guess, is that we are a being that exists outside of this human container. And that when we're born, those of us that believe in this process of spirit, we're born, the being goes into the container, right? And then when we depart, the being comes out of the container to go on and do whatever it is that your belief system believes that we do. So in a normal, in whatever kind of normality, I guess that would mean you're born, you go in, and then when your time is done, you go out. And sometimes people go out and it's not time. It's too early, right?
Right.
And it doesn't even have to be by mistake. I've heard stories where people have health incidents and they're departing and the EMTs come in and do work on them and then they come back.
Right.
And so that's kind of interesting. You know, I go both ways on that. As a medium, I totally get that. But as a human being, part of me is, it's wild. You know, it's just kind of a wild thing to think that inside you is you. Mm-hmm. And in the special circumstances, you are no longer in here. You're out here somewhere.
Yeah, we're talking about life and death. You know, it's pretty dramatic. You can't get any more surreal than that. You know, I've had a few cases where I came close to dying. I don't have any of those dramatic stories that you hear where people describe, you know, getting to a certain point like you just described and having a voice in their head say it's not time, you know, not here, not now, you know, nothing dramatic like that for me. But how about you?
Well, you know, I have an incident. This was years ago, way back in the day. Where there was an automobile accident. And in the automobile accident, I remember looking down on the vehicle. I had that distinct memory of looking down at the vehicle and kind of, I was floating. I occurred light. It was cold, but I wasn't cold. I don't even know how to describe that. It was cold, but I wasn't cold. And it was,
Whoa, that's interesting.
It was very tunnel-like, and I remember looking down, seeing the car. And my daughter was in the car. She was a little girl, and I had somebody else in the car. We were on our way to a studio to record some tracks. And I remember going, oh my God, I'm dead. And then I said, no, I'm not. And then shoop, I was back. And I was just sitting there like, what happened? You know, and it was just a really strange experience because I wasn't like crumbled. I hadn't gone through the windshield. I didn't have like a real traumatic physical event. I just kind of hit the steering wheel a little bit. I say a little bit. My car was total. I had a van. It was totaled in this accident. And everybody was fine. But I remember that. I distinctly remember that. And for me, in my mind, I had a near-death experience. And it might have just been the trauma of the accident itself, my daughter in the van. And I had somebody else's kid in the van with me. And it was intense. So I didn't have that body's all beat up, EMTs working me, I'm in the emergency room, and somebody, I didn't have that experience either, but I distinctly remember the hovering and looking down, the way you see it represented in movies. I distinctly remember that.
The way you describe cold, but not really cold, is, it just kind of triggered me a little bit because a little off topic, but when I was standing underneath that UFO, that's kind of how I describe, you know, the way my body felt when I was standing there stiff like a soldier looking straight up. Was, that's how I describe it, Angel, is it felt like I was cold, but not that cold to where I'm shivering, just enough to where my body was trying to warm itself, you know, from the core, you know, like it was busy. And what a lot of people tell me is, that sounds a lot like an electrical magnetic kind of deal going on. And who knows, that might have something to do with, you know, when we start to flirt with the other side. You know, I think there's a real fine line there.
Well, the thing is, that makes sense because the whole process of being a living being is an electrical process. So if you're in a situation where your heart's not beating anymore, there's no blood circulating into your system, your organs are starting to shut down, I can totally, and you're still connected to your body because you haven't, you know, transitioned. I could totally get the feeling of coldness. And then when you're with a loved one after they've departed, they're cold. It's just, it's always hit me how cold we are. And because we're not, you know, I've been with loved ones in the presentation because we've processed them and like, here you are viewing them. But I've also been in the hospital with people as they left. And it's just almost immediate when that person's gone, they're just cold.
Yeah. It's a whole nother awake. It's just another way to reach, you know, an awakening. There's many routes to reach these awakenings. And like I always say, unfortunately, sometimes, you know, it's one of these dramatic ones, one of these life and death ones where you come really close to death. You know, I have one that I don't have a memory of because I was an infant. What I was told was I had a pretty high fever when I was a baby. They took me into the hospital and they gave me some penicillin. And I'm allergic to penicillin. And I found out the hard way, apparently. My mom said that I blew up like a big purple balloon. And they said that if I ever had penicillin again, it would more than likely, you know, kill me. So I don't have any memories of that. But apparently, right out the gate, you know, I experienced a close call there. But the one that really stands out for me is when I was about 6 or 7, I was playing hide and go seek with my cousin Charlie in Hayward on Mission Boulevard, my Aunt Cindy's house. Once again, my Aunt Cindy seems to pop up in a lot of these stories and experiences. My mom and her boyfriend at the time were in the house doing their thing, whatever they did when they left us kids alone. And me and Charlie had the whole backyard to ourselves. and we decided to play hide and seek, and I saw this really cool place to hide. It was an old refrigerator leaning up in the backyard of the house. And one of them old school fridges too, with a big old metal handle on there. And so I got inside and I thought to myself, oh man, he's never going to find me. This is awesome. And sure enough, I can hear Charlie out there, you know, looking for me. And I'm inside just giggling away, trying to be quiet, you know. And he kind of gave up and I didn't hear him anymore. So I decided to crack the door open. It was starting to get a little hot. You know, I needed some fresh air. And then I realized that I could not open the refrigerator from the inside at all. But luckily, I did notice some rusty, it was an old fridge, so there was some rusty holes, some really tiny pin drop rusty holes. And I literally put my lips up to them rusty holes without panicking. You know, if I would have realized, you know, the significance of what was going to happen to me, I probably would have just sucked up every piece of that oxygen that was left in that fridge just out of fear. But I didn't really, you know, freak out. I just remember putting my lips in and trying to just breathe through those cracks. And I have a memory of me just collapsing, someone opening the door, the refrigerator door, finally. It was my mom's boyfriend. They were getting ready to go. They couldn't find me. And I just come drenching wet. And I fell into my mom's boyfriend's arms. And I remember getting in the back of the car and we're driving home and my mom is just crying and crying. And I just didn't understand why. I go, but mom, you know, I'm okay. You should be happy. But as an adult now, I realize, you know, that's to yeah. see your child come so close to death while you were, you know, having fun partying, you know, in the house. And, you know, that happened. Geez, like I said, I was like 6 or 7 years old. And now there's laws out there, you know, you can't have a refrigerator, you know, facing that way, you know, easily accessible to anybody. You know, it needs to be barricaded. It needs to be bungee cord and turned around to where that accident, you know, can't happen. But yeah, that was a close call for me, for sure.
Do you remember anything that happened when that happened in terms of, you know,
just the blacking, just a slowly just kind of fading away and getting sleepy. And then all of a sudden, the door opens up, all this fresh air comes rushing in, and I'm just collapsed into this man's arms.
Wow.
And I must have, you know, by the time we got to the car, I was already wondering why mom's crying. You know, I didn't think it was a big deal. I didn't die.
On to the next adventure.
Yeah, right. and that's what I did. I mean, there was a point where I remember in these apartments, I was scaling the balcony one day while my mom and her boyfriend at the time, once again, a different guy, they were downstairs by the pool area. And I guess she had left me in the apartment by myself. And I found my way out into the balcony. And apparently I started scaling the balcony. I was on the other side of the protective railings with no fear, of course. And I remember my mom and her boyfriend down there talking to me kind of funny, you know, like, why are you talking to me so easy? You know, like, stay right there out here, you know. I guess she sent her boyfriend in the apartment and while she kept me distracted. And all of a sudden, I just remember being lifted up by these manly arms. And you know, all of a sudden, yeah, yeah,
manly arms.
But I had no idea how close to death I was up there, 2-3 stories high, just scaling a balcony. You know, no fear there.
But, you know, it opens up a different conversation too, because you know, when you think about the near-death experience, most of the time we're talking about the transition between life and death.
Right.
There's also the decisions we make that put us in that circumstance and then who we are, you know, how resilient children are, you know, like just thinking about it. I was watching football this weekend and they were getting hit, you know, it's the playoffs. These guys are in it for keeps. They're picking each other up and throwing them across. And I'm like, if I saw somebody coming at me, the side of my eye, the way these guys are going up, I think I would have a near-death experience before they touched me. You know, these guys are so strong and they're so conditioned, their resilience. It's like a child. You know, if you got locked in a refrigerator today versus that kid back there.
Right.
You know, and it's no wonder that we go through these things when you're young, when we're young, because they're the lessons, they're the learning, but we're also more open to the receipt, you know, of information. We are so conditioned as we get older.
Right.
The social, the family, the work, all the conditioning that we're like, no, I don't believe that. We're kids, we're like, okay, that's cool. Like you said, you get back in the car, mom's crying, everybody's upset, and you're like, that was great. Are we going to Baskin Robbins? You're like ready for the next thing. You probably did the same thing on the balcony, like, oh man, I was playing.
Yeah.
Now I gotta find something else to do. Because you were a kid. That's, you know, why do we not? And I'm not asking people to go play in the balcony, but what makes it different when we're older? Why don't we do that when we're older? How do we process? Is that ingrained in you? Do you believe, like, did you learn a lesson from those two incidents that you carry with you today? Whether the lesson is the incident itself or the conversation with the parent as a result of the incident.
It's got to be a little bit of it all. And I believe I retained a little bit of it all. I didn't probably learn as much as I should have from these lessons, but, you know, as a child. But as an adult, yeah, like you said, we're just conditioned for, you know, look out for this, look out for that, you know, don't do this, don't do that. And, you know, it's you come across it probably less likely, you know, than you would as a free-spirited, you know, child. But as an adult,
yeah, you know,
it still happens. You know, I remember thinking at one point, you know, when I almost drowned when I was in the Navy. I went to Hawaii and I said, all right, let's start visiting these beaches, you know. And I was out there with the boogie board thinking I was safe because I was close to the shore. I had no idea what shore break was. And these waves were just putting me under. Every time I hold my breath, I'm thinking, okay, I can't hold my breath anymore. I would reach the surface and grab a breath of air before the next, you know, wave crashed me. And finally, the ocean just threw me out and said, get the hell out of here. And I remember it threw me out, that shore break, you know, those waves just tumbled me until finally there was no more, you know, water left. It was just sand. And, but I remember thinking, so this is what it's like to die, because I reached the point where I could not hold my breath anymore. I was about to just I felt like I was just about to naturally take in some water. But, and that [S2] Wow. [S1] Was when I was 21, you know, I did learn a lesson that time. I learned what shore break was. I had no idea what shore break was.
Wow. That, you know, when we have these experiences that teach us these lessons in life, you know, it's very tribal in nature. It's like, that's how we've always learned as creatures, right? You know, you make a mistake, oops, and hopefully your mistake didn't cost you your life.
Yeah.
And then you learn from it. But to me, I feel like people who've gone through near-death experiences, it's almost like a baptism, because a lot of them come out and create an empowering conversation around life transformation as a result.
Oh yeah.
Their experience.
Yeah, you know, and if you know, you do have these experiences of, like we said, a little bit more dramatic, to where, you know, it's not here, not now, this is not the time, you have to go back. You try to explain that to somebody as an experience that you personally experienced, and, you know, you might be told basically, oh, that's just your mind's natural way of dealing with things, you know.
Yeah. Like,
and that's frustrating, you know, because, you know, as humans, we don't want to hear this. You know, when someone says, oh, it's all in your head, I mean, you could take it out of context and it doesn't sound very good. But the truth is, I believe it really is in our head. You know, we keep looking for this physicality about everything, and it's becoming to look more and more cerebral. So I'm beginning to believe that, you know, more than likely it is in our head, especially when you're talking about, you know, DMT. And from what I gather, you know, it's a natural chemical that your body makes for certain purposes. And a couple of the purposes, from what I gather, are birth and death. You know, you naturally are dumped DMT when you're born, and your mind's dumped full of DMT at the moment of death. And some people believe that this amount of DMT that is being dumped into you at these moments is a tool to actually open the portal for your spirit, for your orb, for your spirit's chariot, you know, for that energy, you know, that energy that doesn't dissipate, it just transforms us, the true us. Yeah, what an awakening that is to come from. Have you heard the conversations that these people have? They're the most loving, most open. They have this whole new lease on life, and they've got a great attitude, you know, because they experienced something that's telling them this is real. And, you know, when it happens, maybe we shouldn't worry about it as much as we put on it. You know, it's just another process of life. And I'll give it a break for a second on that.
I was with you. I was following you. You were putting on a good show. I loved it. No. So, you know, what always kind of impacts me when I listen to people who have the story, and I've heard all manner of stories from people who are just like, I was here, then I wasn't here, then I was here again, to I went, I saw grandma, I saw everybody, and then Uncle Tom says, hey, not your time. You know, I've heard all the different stories. And the ones that impact me the most are the ones where people say it's not your time.
Yeah.
Because somebody knew it wasn't your time.
Yes.
And so it's like you went, and the way to describe it, it's peaceful, it's fabulous, and you want to stay.
Right.
I have lost so many loved ones. If I went to sleep and woke up and I was in this place and they were my brothers and my mom and my grandmothers and all these people and my uncles, they were all there. I want to stay, right?
Yeah.
Who wouldn't want to stay? And we're in our most uplifting presence. We're not shackled with all the negativities, yes, that come with being a human being. So we are like open to, we're like in this loving place. Who doesn't want to stay there?
Right.
And then somewhere, somebody says, welcome. It's good to see you. You look great. But you're not, yeah, done. It's not time. You have to go back. And then for many of the people that I've read about and spoken to, their first reaction is, aw,
right,
why do I have to go? And that's a big, loud, loud reality check for me about the condition of this world sometimes. Like, why do I have to come back? Because you have work to do. And that's the thing, because you have work to do. And that work's not always like Mother Teresa or Gandhi. No, it doesn't mean that they're here to do that work. It could be as simple as you're the postman and they need to keep getting their mail. Go back and can keep delivering the mail. Because every contribution is significant.
Mm-hmm.
That's right. What sits for me.
That's awesome. Yeah, you're right. It doesn't have to be this dramatic, you know, because you're going to become a prophet of a nun of a priest next door. Yes. Yeah, it's the subtle things that it's a domino effect. You know, you could be part of somebody's spiritual domino effect, you know.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And, you know, I always talk about Daniel Brinkley. He's always my favorite example to give, because if you read his story, he's very, I got to meet him years ago at a convention, and I got to spend like 3 days with this guy. He's loud, fabulous. He's from the South. He's just real, I guess is the best adjective I could assign to him. That guy, he's real. And he was not the nicest guy. And that's how he puts it. He was selfish. He was kind of a womanizer. He was just not a nice guy. And then one day he was hit by lightning and he was pronounced dead. and then he came back. The thing that's so crazy about Daniel Brinkley's story is that he got hit by lightning and pronounced dead 3 times in his life. And one time he actually woke up zipped in a body bag in the morgue.
It.
So he was like, what the heck? And he had to unzip the body bag and get out and like knock on the door and like, hello guys, dot dead.
Yeah, it's me again.
It's me. Sorry. My bad. And I think if I'm correct, the likelihood of getting struck by lightning is like 1 in a million or something. And this happened right. 3 different times. And not in the same day. It's like 3 different times.
He needs to play the lottery at least.
I'm trying to tell you, right? Yeah. And so with Daniel Brinkley, he went on to become this speaker of the truth, so to speak. First, he started telling his story. He wrote a book. Then he got hit by lightning again. He wrote another book. He started giving lectures. And he became, you know, kind of a notable, you know, a celebrity. But the thing that he became passionate about was he would go to hospitals. He built a coalition of people and he would help people that were transitioning into death. He would sit with them and their families and help them through the process. And when I met him, he was just starting that. And I'm like, wow, that sounds amazing. And he asked me if I would like to join. And I was just, I was like 20 something. I'm like, no, it's all right. Ah, you know,
yeah.
I was kind of freaky at the time, but that is so beautiful because how scary is it? You know, I just came out of a medical crisis. And when you're in the hospital and you don't know what's going to happen and the doctors are around you talking about, you know, we think you'll be all right, but there's this, your soul is shaking. It's like, oh my God. Am I going to die? To have somebody there with you, that's not a priest or a nun who's like, let us pray, you know,
right.
You know, confess your sins. You know, it's not that. It's like, I've been there. And I don't know if it's your time, but I'm here to tell you there's nothing to be scared of. I was so impacted by that I still think of that guy to this day. I haven't seen him in decades, but I think about him all the time because I think about that.
Yeah, 3 times. That's amazing. Yeah, the chances of that are off the charts. And from what you gathered, he's totally changed. Definitely changed his ways, right?
He totally changed. You know, he's still brass, I guess. You know, he's still that guy, but he's not about himself anymore. And I think that's the key. You're walking in ego. You're about you. And that's the hardest thing about being in this human state is we make it about us and we don't even know we're doing it. And right. So what I've noticed, when you enter this process of coming close to death, you really see the vastness,
yeah.
The expanse of the universe in our relationship to it. And then you come back in the body and all of a sudden it's not just you anymore. Does that make sense?
Yeah. It's like, I think every once in a while we get a chance to check in on that other side real quick.
Yeah.
And it's not a permanent, you know, move. It's just a quick visit. And sometimes there's different ways of getting there. You know, I think just like the ancient knowledge of sound and frequency can get you somewhere. Speaking of that, yeah, that kind of sounded like a meditating horn of some Lord. Was that you?
So I could be all spooky and say, "Ooh, like, real."
But you
I
know
live,
what it is.
I live by an airport, and for some reason there was a plane flying by. And normally I would edit that out, but I think I'm gonna leave that in there because it was kind of funny.
Yeah.
But yeah. That was weird because it was like right at the right time. And, you know, isn't it interesting the people and the circumstances that are selected when this happens and how people talk about it, right?
Yeah.
Sometimes people have, I have a friend of mine, I haven't spoken to him in years, back in my my rock and roll days when I was in a band and all kinds of stuff. And this person was living the rock and roll life,
yeah,
and overdosed on something. And I'm not clear what it was, because I don't remember if it was the H or the whatever. I don't know what it was he overdosed on, but he overdosed. And he used to correct me all the time, because I'm like, you didn't overdose. He says, oh, I overdosed. I was lucky enough I made it back. So he would always correct me and say, when you talk about it, I overdosed. That's what happened. And he stopped doing drugs, by the way. He became a born-again Christian. Oh. He was just really intense. But he died. We did CPR on this guy. It was just like in the movies. It was like, this guy is going to die. We're like in this hotel room with beer and stuff all over the place. And we're like, we're going to have to call the paramedics. And we look like, you know, the Doors movie. What are they going to do to us? And we did CPR on him. We couldn't find a pulse. He was gone. We continued. And before they got there, the paramedics got there, he came back. And when he came back, he didn't say nothing. He just sat there kind of in a daze. He didn't say anything. And so I'm like, are you okay? And he would just nod or shake his head. He didn't say anything. And the paramedics came, they took him to the hospital. We got our lectures from the cops about living a good life. And we went to go see him in the hospital. And I'd been in metaphysics for a long time. Everybody that knew me got to hear my story. So when we were leaving him, he said, hey, man, can you stay for a minute? And I'm like, sure. And that's when he told me what happened. And in his story, he, I'm trying to remember everything. He was in a room, then he was greeted by a relative, taken to another place where other relatives were, and they were preparing him. And I think he said it like his great grandmother came up. It's like, it's not your time. Why are you here? You have to go back. You have work to do. And everybody says, it's not his time. Oh, it's not. I'm sorry. Let's take you back. And he's like, what do you mean? My life's jacked. I might as well stay here. I can't do anything for anybody. And in his memory, it was Jesus he saw that said, you have a lot of work yet still to do. And then he woke up on the floor of the hotel. And that's when he changed his life and went down a different path than the path he was on his way down.
He changed that timeline for sure.
And for me, it's like, is that how they always do it? Are we that knucklehead of species that we can't just get up and say, you know what, I think I'm going to go. We have to go through that to get there sometimes. Or is it the impact that that person has on the lives of people? Because now, Mike, if that guy runs into another young person who's on that path, he has a conversation he can have with them.
Big time.
Right?
Yeah.
So it's like being chosen. It's like you've been chosen.
Or that was part of the contract.
Yep, that was part of the contract. That's a whole conversation too.
Mm-hmm.
And those are the things that impact me. There's so many stories of near death that are just so profound.
Well, for them to say it's not your time is suggesting they already know the plan. Like, you know, when we talk about the Akashic Records, you know, we had a show on that. The information that's within that realm, when you tap into that realm, it might very well be the same realm, part of the same realm.
That's what they say, right? They say that you come to the world, you have a plan, right?
Right.
I'm going to come in on this day and this year, and this is when it's going to happen. And then I'm going to depart over there. That's when that's going to happen. And then you come into the body and you forget all of that. And you don't know that when you walk out on that day, that's your last day on the earth. You don't know that. But in your soul, you do. And all the people around you that were in spirit that are part of your path, I guess they do too. Because to your point, they would have to if they're looking at you, it's like, you're not, it's not time. right?
And right. And I mean, like you said, in that one man's experience, you know, there was a lot of the family, they just thought it was time, and they were preparing, and, you know, it looked like he was being processed in a sense, you know. And then grandma was the only one that stepped in and said, it's not, what are you doing here? Like she already seen the, you know, that's grandma mom right there.
Grandma says go.
Apparently grandma knew, you know, that it really wasn't time. And, you know, everyone else in the family was like, oops, you know, sorry. Well, oh gosh. Okay. Well, you know, let's next.
Well, you said something too a little while ago. I want to make sure before we run out of time, because we do run out of time because we get to go in, because I want to touch on it because I think it's such an interesting part of the conversation. There are a lot of people out there, you know, the naysayers, the skeptics that don't necessarily believe that near-death experiences happen. Like, this is just a chemical reaction in your brain to the process and the synapses in your brain breaking down as you're departing. And it just so happens that the work that we did to save your life worked, and we got you back in.
Right. Yeah, that's, you know, to see it on paper, scientifically explained. Here we go again with the whole paranormal pseudoscience, you know.
Science.
We got to give ourselves more credit, you know. There's a lot more going on in our heads.
And, right. And this thing, this noggin, this brain is so, there's so much about it that we don't know.
Right.
So much about it that we don't know. And, you know, I love the dreams. We got to do that one day. The dream conversation, because some people are yes. like, oh, dreams mean all these things. Other people, it's just what your brain does when you're asleep.
Right.
Stop talking about it. Yeah. But what is it? How do we know?
Is it our, you know, the stuff in the subconscious that, you know, actually goes, okay, finally, I'm at this, you know, he finally put his body to rest and stopped worrying about what flip-flops he's going to buy, or, you know, what, you know, this or that is popular right now.
Right. And then, you know, so, you know, you have the near-death experience. So there, you have the situation, Mike, where he's like, you go and they're like, get back in that body, you come back. And, you know, why doesn't it happen for just anybody? I remember when my brother Mike passed away, he was in the hospital and he was in an induced coma and he wasn't going to come out. And I remember sitting there crying, begging him not to go. And he, tears coming down his eyes. Never forget that. Tears coming down his eyes. They told us, talk to him because he can hear you. That's what they say to the families when the loved one is yes. departing and they're in it. So he can hear you. And I was like, you can't leave, you know, blah, 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 all the dramatic, because I'm a drama queen. And the tears. And so the what was real for me as a metaphysician coming out of that after I processed my grief was he knew it wasn't time, he couldn't come back. And the hurt and the pain that he felt from me, his human process was processing. He couldn't even speak to me. He couldn't take my hand. He couldn't hold me. He couldn't say anything because he was in this unconscious, conscious state. So it's like, he knew he couldn't come back. But my friend didn't know and didn't want to come back. Did he want to? He wanted to stay over there with all his family. He's like, why go back over there? My life is jacked. I'm a drug addict. I play drums for a stupid band. I'm like nothing. Here, I'm with them. Look at all this love. And so it's like, are there people that make it back when they were supposed to go? Do you think? The wow. same scenario. So it's right. like you get there and somebody says, you're not supposed to be here. Go back. But you get there and you're like, screw this.
And then, yeah. Back. Is that what causes a lot of spirits to be stuck or attached to?
Well, the whole ghost haunting thing. That's an interesting conversation. But I mean, back into the body, like can you come back?
Is there another way to be on the other side without going back towards source? You know, maybe you can just hang out. Like you're stuck.
I don't want to go. Never mind.
Yeah, I don't want to go in that cold body, you know.
I don't want to depart. I change my mind. You're telling me it's time. I'm saying it's not. Is that possible?
Right. Can I cancel my contract right here?
I'm going to go back. So I'm not, I'm not interested today in passing across the veil.
Yeah.
Thank you for coming. No. Can you
change it yourself?
That?
Yeah.
Can you do that? My teachings tell me no, but how do I know? I don't know. I'm like you. I'm a human being sitting here on this side of the conversation, right? I don't know what's on the other side of the conversation. I won't know until I go there, right?
Yeah, until we check in.
Yeah. So that sat for me after I lost my brother, because, you know, if he could have bargained or could have changed things, even if just for a little bit of time, do we have the ability? Do some people have that strength in whatever part of your process that would be? You know, what holds the spirit in the body? What holds your essence in there? What keeps you from just going away when you go to sleep at night?
Oh, wow. It's this motor, it's this vehicle we have, you know, with this heart pumping and this blood going through these veins. You know, like I say, it's this advanced technology, man. This is it. We're in it. They found a way to encapsulate our spirit in a physical form. And this is what it looks like. And this is what it feels like. And we can either choose to to be healthy and live the good life and going towards our higher self, or we can just get trapped, which a lot of us do in this cruel, cold world, you know, of programs and pre-programming and desensitizing, all in order to serve someone that has no interest in your well-being, really.
Wow.
Different strokes for different folks. Different strokes for different spirits. I believe if your heart is screaming at the moment of death that you don't want it, you know, and maybe you can change it on the fly if the energy is hitting that peak just right. But I think the contracts are very powerful.
I think they are too, and I think that for me, it's really simple. And, you know, I try to put it simple. I'm getting older. Simple is easier to put my hands around than complicated. And everybody has a worthiness about them to be their best representative of who they are, whatever that means. If you want to be a guru, if you want to be a golf instructor, if you want to work as a cashier at the Walmart, it's not for me to judge who you are. It's not for anybody to judge who you are. Are you your happiest? Are you contributing the best you that you can possibly contribute? Everybody deserves to do that. Everybody deserves to do that. And that should be the reason why we're here. And if you think about how much time we have, it's finite, right? It's fine. We only have this little bit of, in the grand scale of things, this is how much time we have on this planet.
Yes.
So why not just be in a space of joy? And I think that that's the point. Learn the lessons and continue to grow and develop whatever that means for you. And then when it's time to go, it's time to go. But it's not like at work, you're like, oh, it's time to go. You clock out and you go. We don't actually have a conversation about knowing, for the most part, when it's time to go.
Yeah, that takes the fun out of it for somebody.
Yeah.
For all of us. It's school. It's school for our soul, you know?
It is school for our soul. That's how I look at it, too. It's powerful. And it's not a heavy subject if you think about it. I think that if everybody just gave this concept of thought for a moment, you know, if we all had that near-death experience, and I'm good, you know, I don't need one today,
right?
But if we had the opportunity to really consider what it would be like to not be here, would we be different tomorrow?
We would have to.
And I invite people to consider just doing that. Just be different tomorrow. Don't force yourself into the trauma of near death to make the change you need to make to be the best you possible. If we do that, then we won't have to die.
Right. Someone else has already done that track work there.
Somebody else has done the track work.
Now we're talking faith, you know, just having faith and trusting, you know, till they experience themselves, you know, a lot of people won't go there with it. You know,
faith in and of itself is an amazing topic, and we should definitely talk about that sometime, because it's the fabric. I used to say faith was the thread, but it's not. To me, it's the fabric, because it's, there goes the plane again.
The plane, boss.
The plane, yes, the plane. It's the fabric that keeps the entire kind of outfit that is life from falling apart. And if you don't have faith in something, you don't have to believe what I believe. If you don't have faith in something, then you are wearing the emperor's new clothes. Right?
Right. You're part of the problem.
You're wearing the emperor's new clothes. You're just walking around naked. You don't even know it. And so for me, you got to believe in something. Because if you believe in something, you're not afraid. What are you afraid of? You're afraid that you're not going to die before your wife and she's going to be alone. I get that. That's why you're the best person you can be, because the time you have together is magnificent. Somebody's going to go first. So why can't you enjoy the time you have together? You finish everything you have to do so you don't have regrets. So you don't have to be afraid of regrets. So, do all the things to make your life as magnificent for you as you possibly can in an unselfish, loving way, so that you're contributing, because you got to contribute to society. And I don't mean you got to be a cop. You can volunteer at the local what have you, whatever your charity of choice is, and live. And then you are no longer wearing the emperor's new clothes. That's how I look at it.
I like that.
Thank you. That's my speech. Thank you for listening to my TED Talk today.
It makes me believe that there is angels out there that are looking after us. And, there's moments that happen to us that we don't give a second thought. We're driving down the freeway and you look in the rearview mirror and there's a car that's just flying and they're not paying attention and they're about to ram right into the back of your car. And you see it's about to happen, and you just kind of like hold your breath and like it's too late to do anything. And then all of a sudden that car just barely misses you and passes, and you feel the
yes.
And like that, literally what I just described, happened to me one day just driving home from work. And I didn't really, whiplash is a huge thing. If someone hits you from the back, I always think if they hit you from the back, that's gotta be better from, than head on. Like, no, that could have been a life changer for me, just that moment that I didn't even think of to share until now. But that makes me think that these angels are intervening at moments right before something dramatic happens, sometimes within the moment of the stages of levels, like you were describing earlier. Their job, these messengers, these angels, they're telling us something. They're telling us that there's more work to do, and that's telling me that they see the future, and we should be proud and excited. Like, wow, I wonder what it's going to be. What is my job? Why? What's so important for me to not go yet? That's exciting in itself. You just keep following that gut, and you keep getting these little synchronicities that are saying, just keep going, just keep going. And then we'll find out. I think we will find out.
You will find out. And I concur. I feel like if you are aware and you are conscious and you can catch these signals, it's like you have people around you in every kind of existence, angels and masters and guides and ancestors, they're trying to tell you something. When you're walking down, there's like a common move. They're like, hey, Mike, I'm trying to tell you something. And we don't see them and we don't hear them. So they try to point at stuff. And we don't see them, we don't hear them. We're like the little monkeys. Speak no evil, see no evil, hear no, we don't, nothing. Eventually, if the message is powerful, they'll knock you down to get you to see the message.
Yes.
And I could tell you from experience, you do not want to get knocked down.
Yeah. Learn the signs. Learn the signs.
Learn the signs, baby. Learn to be conscious, because getting knocked down is a harrowing experience. And do you want to go through the recovery from the knockdown? And being knocked down could look like anything. And for some people, it's a near-death experience.
Yeah.
And, you know, what is it he called it? It wasn't a near life. He called it, my friend had a term for it because he didn't like near death.
Okay.
And I can't remember. I'm going to find this young man. It's been a long time. It's something like re-life or relive. It reminded me of Logan's Run. I don't remember what it was. And he used to speak about it like I was reborn, but he didn't like to use reborn because it sounded too much like born again, which by definition, that's what he was, but it's okay.
Yeah. But we try to label everything. You know rebirth. How I am.
That's what he called it, rebirth. He called it rebirth.
Rebirth. Okay, yeah.
But my goodness, this was a radical topic. This was, you know, I would love to hear from people if you've had a near-death experience, if you have opinions about a near-death, you know, I would love to hear from people so they can share their thoughts, because this is a profound conversation, and it is kind of heavy for some people.
Yeah.
You know, nobody wants to talk about that. They want to talk about the fun stuff, but this is Paranormal Friday, and this is what we committed when we started this journey together, that we're going to talk about stuff. Right?
Right. There's a thin line between all these things, and some of it may not sound as fun as the others, but actually there's a lot of information in you know, if you really look into these near-death experiences, it's just another road, another route to another awakening. It really is.
No, you're right. It is. You know, it's part of that ascension conversation is coming back. If you get in a second chance, how many movies have they made about the person going and then giving this, the angels give them a second chance? And what are you going to do with your second chance? Yeah. And that's, I think, what separates the regular from the people who have been chosen, because most of the people that I've met, not all of them, most of the people that I've met that have experienced this near death process, they've made profound decisions about their life. Whereas would they have made that decision if that hadn't happened? What would Daniel Brinkley have done with his life if he hadn't been struck by lightning 3 times?
Yeah. Take more chances. Take less regret with you. I think, you know, that was one of the biggest ones that, from what I gather, is when people are in this state, you know, they're not wishing that they would have worked harder or made more money. It was the more simple, basic things like quality time with their loved ones. And that's when they finally get to realize, you know, the real important things and how painful regret is. Like, I really wish I would have, you know, spent more quality time with my friends and family instead of working on my ego, or, you know, that whole ego thing too. I'm still learning about that too. I'm sure I'm full of it and I don't realize it. Like you were speaking of earlier, you know, that's a tough
ego.
One.
The ego is tough because it's who we are. We are conditioned to survive. It's a survival technique. It's like, if I'm alive and I'm okay, then I can help take care of my family. I can do this. I can do that. So it's like, what do they say in the airplane when they're giving you the speech? Put your mask on yourself first, and then put your mask on the person.
Yes.
Right. So yes. It's about us. Me, 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 me. That's what it's about. And if you listen to your friends or listen to even to the radio, it's like, I don't listen to the radio music shows anymore because I'm into rock and roll. I listen to music because all the morning shows are just like the dog pound now, right? Yep. And yeah. It's just wild, crazy stuff. That's what people want to hear. I'm not mad at them. But the things that they're doing are in ego. And the more that we're in ego, the less we have the right kind of filters. We don't have an appropriateness filter anymore. We're just in people's face. We're in people's business. We're so just different, and we grow different and different every day. You know, if we could just take one day, whereas I'm not going to think about me today, I'm going to think about everybody but me. How would that conversation look? How would that day look? You can't do anything about you today. How would that look?
Wow, one day, picking one day. You know, that sounds simple enough, but that in itself is a challenge. It really is. I've thought that to myself for other things, silly things, things that I'm working on. Yeah. Hey, Mike, just pick one day. You know, there's 7 days in a week. 300. Yeah, we can go on and on. We could. Yep. It's a numbers game.
Yeah.
Can't you just pick one day and see how you feel? And that in itself is tough.
It is so tough. I mean, think about what it would look like. You have to get up. Your spouse gets up. You have to let your spouse get coffee first.
Okay, for an example. All right.
No matter how slow they're moving or what they're doing.
Oh.
When you go into the bathroom to do your morning routine, you have to stop and let your spouse go in. Being a woman, I know how that could be because our bathroom time is way different from our husband's bathroom time. Right? Everything you do will have to be about somebody else.
Wow.
Just thinking about it kind of makes people, oh no, man, can we have some rules about this non-ego day, which in and of itself is ego.
See, that's what makes it so tough. Yeah. Everywhere you turn, you're like,
but you know, I have to go to the bathroom. What if I have to go to the bathroom? How many times did you just say I?
Yes.
Right. And so the one thing, though, we've digressed a little bit, so I'm going to circle back and kind of put it back together, though. The one time when you're not an ego is when you're sitting here in this duality of being in spirit and being in human. When you have this near-death experience and the person says to you, it's not your time, go back. And you say yes, because you're not an ego. Right?
Yeah, it's an understanding right there on the spot.
And then you come back. And for a lot of them, they bring that consciousness back with them and carry it through the remainder of their experience. Where you at, Mike? Where you at?
Yeah, it's something, you know, and it'll, just imagine all the people that don't share that, but it's definitely a, you know, something to share so others can learn.
That's awesome.
Some people don't share half the things that they experience, you know.
No, they don't. So I'm looking at the clock like I always have to do because I'm the keeper of the clock. Which is a really sucky job, just so you guys know, being the keeper of the clock is no fun, but we're coming to an end. And this was a really good talk. This was so significant. You know, every once in a while, we have a program that's like really significant as compared to just kind of fun. And this one is significant. It made me think, and I hope it made people who are listening to it think.
Yeah, for sure. It sounds so dramatic, yet it's so simple. And we put a lighter message on it, hopefully, you know, to the people that are, you know, worried about it all the time. I mean, it's natural to maybe worry about it, but to fear it is just a waste of time and it's a distraction. And you can, you know, just take it from the people that have came real close.
Yes. You know?
Take it from them. It's worth your while to do things like you were speaking of and give someone else, put someone else above you for a day and see how that makes you feel. That might become pretty addicting, I would imagine.
Yeah. Wow. Well, another Paranormal Friday in the bank. This was a good session. I have a lot of stuff to think about as I, you know, continue my journey, and I'm grateful to be here, to be able to have this dialogue. So if you guys have anything to share, please comment, you know, reach out to us and let us know. We are happy to hear your stories, and let us know if you want us to talk about anything in particular.
Yeah.
Because we want to talk about what you want to talk about. Right, Mike?
Yeah. Play with us. Come on.
Oh yeah. Let's play. Come out and play. Oh, I like that. I like that. That's a good place to end. Well, we'll see you guys next week.
All right.
Y'all. Bye. Bye-bye.
Bye. Have a good day.